Hello and welcome back to Vox Burner's Youth Trends podcast. Now, today we're joined by Clint Runge, who is Managing Director of youth culture agency Arch Rival, and they'll be talking to us about their new paper, The New Abnormal, ahead of their appearance at YMS Online USA this October.
My name is Clint Runge. I'm the Managing Director and Founder of Arch Rival. Arch Rival is a youth culture agency that unlocks human-powered marketing for a new generation. There's a lot we can unpack with that. We probably will as we get into the podcast, but for us, it's all about building the people networks in and around our brand's key business metrics. And that can look different for a lot of different brands, but it's a ton of fun.
Absolutely. Thank you. And Clint, look, over the past 4 months, the world has turned upside down and back again. There's been so many changes within, you know, the marketing industry. For you, what have been those key major changes that have, you know, that you've seen and thought, wow, this is changing things?
Yeah, well, you're right. The world is seemingly on fire and you know, we don't know when it'll stop burning. And I don't know, that might be what we decide is the how things change, right? That's might be here to stay. I think when I think about like what's actually changed in the marketing industry for the past 3-4 months, I think I see a lot of people paralyzed in what to say. I think there's everyone's so nervous to get it wrong that there have been some that have just been, they're not willing to say anything. And that might be even more dangerous. I've seen there's this new language that's developed where everybody feels like they need to pivot, right? Like, oh, it's a new, everything's different. There's a new normal. And everyone wants to pivot. You know, I don't know that we should all be pivoting. There's probably some businesses that absolutely need to do. They need a completely new business model. But I think this language of pivot, and this is true in the marketing industry, but it's true for all of them, is that everyone just started pivoting so much that they lost sight of who they are. And look, like, you've built a business, you're good at what you do. Tweaking may make sense. Being sensitive to the moment makes sense. But all the pivots, I'm nervous for those that when something else changes, are they going to overreact again and completely change the business model? For us, it's like, stay the course, be sensitive, make the right changes. Of course, we're culturally in tune, but complete pivots to me, I think the marketing industry has just been like hyper reactionary. And that's kind of been a big change the last 4 months. And I don't know where that'll net out exactly. Again, some of those absolutely necessary, but there's some that have changed. I'm just like, wow, now you're that? It doesn't feel authentic. It doesn't feel real. And, you know, how are you, like, I don't know if that's going to, if you're going to be able to hold that for much longer. Yeah, there you go.
And I think on that kind of leads really nicely to, I guess, what I was looking to discuss next on, you know, what brands do you think have dealt with a crisis well, that you know you referenced the word like authentic, you know, that have sort of kept true to their voice and maintained that story, and maybe others that, you know, have surprised you and maybe not dealt with it so well, or, you know, have made an error as could often happen.
Yeah, I think there's some really good examples. My sense is particularly around COVID-19, the pandemic, actually a lot of brands have done really well with this one, and I've just sensed that there's been a more positive reaction to that than the negative ones. You know, anyone who's said, look, we're going to extend our assets to the people who need it now. People like McDonald's and Starbucks, they give free coffee. They came and said, we'll give free coffee to all the healthcare workers. Anyone who is creating masks and said, we can make masks. We create clothing. We can create masks. We'll give that to healthcare workers. I think anyone who leveraged their assets, things that were true to who they are, it's stuff that we already have that we can give to others, those were easy wins. And I think a lot of people did do that. A lot of brands did step in the moment. And, you know, in general, I'm actually kind of proud of business in general for stepping into that. That was sort of like initially. There was another group that I looked at and I was like, wow, that's next level. It's this group, Ideal Jewelers. They're based out of China, where obviously everything originated, but they turned, as soon as jewelry stores have been killed, a lot of people have been killed in jewelry stores too. And as soon as all their stores had to shut, they came out with a platform where they turned their 1,000 associates into 1,000 stores. And so their store no longer was about the physical location, it was about the people. They teamed them up with different influencers and they essentially became affiliates, all these affiliate networks that they put out there. They created a new product that was, I guess, more sensitive to the cost parameters of a pandemic. And they just see it out there and they had a ton of success. And this really got me thinking about, you know, I think one of the evolutions is that, and it's already been sitting there and it's already been true before this, was that, you know, where and when and why we buy. We have people that we have put in physical locations to do that thing. And in reality, they're human beings that can be anywhere at any time. So I really thought they did a great job. On the negative side, like those who I didn't think did a great job, you know, without naming particular names, I think it's like anyone who didn't listen and act. There was a ton of brands who just listened and then never said anything. And I think they got called out. I think there's also a bunch of people who just acted and again, reacted and just said, well, we're going to do all these things and this and this and this. And they probably stumbled and said the wrong, you know, sensitive time, yeah. Particularly in, when we're, you know, talking about the equality movement. They said the wrong thing at the wrong time and they didn't listen and they just, you know, started talking and acting. And I think that was a miss too. The best brands I have seen anyway, in my opinion, is that they listened first, understood to whatever degree they could with the pandemic and the seriousness of that, or with racial inequality, that they listened as much as they could and then took what they believed to be their best foot forward, their best actions. That's resonated really well.
Just out of interest, did the Yorkshire tea story make it over to the States? There's a famous brand in the UK called Yorkshire Tea. It's an English breakfast tea brand. Don't know if it did it make, no, I'm guessing not.
No, but I'm gonna Google it and find out all about it.
Yeah, so they they didn't react or make any comments around like the Black Lives Matter movement. And then someone tweeted them saying, I'm really pleased my favorite tea brand isn't supporting the Black Lives Matter movement. And they replied saying, at whatever the name is, please stop drinking our tea. You know, we've been listening, waiting, but thank you for prompting us, or something like that. And in England, which obviously tea is like, you know, people are obsessed with tea, it hit all the news like the next day. It was enormous. So Yorkshire Tea. It was quite simple.
Well, you know, and there's this interesting thing, just like, do we, and just as a consequence of our cultures, no right answer to this, like, do we expect everyone to make public statements now about every crisis? I think that's a real challenge for marketers going forward. Like, what do we expect of everyone now? And if you didn't make a statement, are we to assume the worst? You know, I think these are real questions that marketers and brands are wrestling with.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, moving on, Clint, to, I know you referenced earlier, you know, your project, the Unknowable Now. I mean, never more so has the title been so relevant. Like, can you talk a little bit more around that and what, I guess, any big surprises that you may have learned along the way when producing, you know, this body of work?
Sure. Well, the Unknowable Now happened. So after the COVID-19, everything shut down, we realized, you know, like everybody, right, there's a lot that is going to have to be thought about and digested from this. We immediately went out and talked to hundreds of young adults, Gen Z, compiled and analyzed all of their answers of just like how they're feeling right now. And rather than put out like points of data, like X number of people feel this way, it was really more of an insights approach to say, to really understand the emotion that's happening with them. Of course, what surprised me, it was in a world, and especially a couple months ago, where everything seemed to be the worst. It could not get, like, everybody seemed so down. It was surprising, if not inspiring, to see their moments of joy and how they were capturing that. And I think that's one of the things that really stood out for me. It's like, wow, even amongst all this, it's interesting to see how people are making the most of the moment. And so there's a feel good story that comes out of it. And that's what the Unknowable now is. If people are interested, of course, they can go to our website and download it and read it. But that's, yeah, that was one of the things that really stood out to me. It's just like that feeling. The other thing that stood out to me in our study was, or I guess the surprising piece of the study was, you know, I think going into this, a lot of people would tell you, oh, you know, those kids, those young adults, they're always on their phone. It's so easy for them. This would probably be, what do they care about a pandemic? They're already staying in their bedrooms and texting people. And it actually, what we heard from people, from young adults, was how much they missed people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're way more in tune technologically and able to adapt to the moment. They missed people. They missed human interaction. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised by that, but it did to the degree of which they talk about missing their friends and that human interaction, that was a bit surprising for me. But that also gives me great faith, right, in a new generation.
I'm going to say it's a good surprise for sure, absolutely. And you know, we reference kind of the past 4 months, just enormous change. And I guess it's kind of a hard thing to maybe talk about. But what do you think the coming year holds for not only marketing but youth marketing? What does it look like in your view?
Mm-hmm. What we were talking about before, it's like, you know, businesses got in business to make money. Like, that's why they exist. And now they're being pushed into the business of morals. So how you view the world and your opinions of that now matter. And I would say that is the marketing. So especially when you get to youth marketing, the younger you get, the more true that is going to be. And I think that the world has set up, we have such immense distrust among the institutions of the world, government, banks, big businesses, big brands. We just assume they all don't have our best interest in mind. And that's a change that brands are going to have to wrestle with. By our mere existence doesn't give us some foundation. We have to go out and earn the trust. No one's going to bring that to us. In fact, they're going to assume the opposite of it, and we have to go out and earn it. And I think for those that are targeting young adults, that's going to be some heavy lifting and hard working that they're going to have to do this year and probably for the rest of this generation, is earn their trust.
Yeah. I love what you sort of referenced about, you know, people are in business to do business, but now they're in the business of morals. That's like,
yeah,
very like poignant.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. And by the way, some brands are really set up well to do that because they have principles that were built in from the beginning of this, but most are not. I mean, most are like, what? Like, first of all, why are people asking us? And second of all, we're not prepared to do that. We know how to make product and we know how to price it and distribute it. We don't know how to tell you how to feel about Black Lives Matter. Like, they're just not set up to do that. And it's caused, as you know, a ton of chaos.
And actually on that, I've come off recording a webinar for our online event, and a question that was asked, and actually I quite like to ask it to yourself, is that, do you think that Gen Z are forgiving when brands make errors? Are they forgiving? You know,
great question. So I think if you just, you know, did a skim across social, you would say no. I mean, cancel culture is very alive, and I think that the share of voice that is given to the loudest voices is not actually appropriate size to how people actually feel. I think there's a wide group in the middle who all know and understand they've screwed up before. They know that they don't have it all right. And I think they do have some extension of grace to put out there. However, because the voices are so loud, and because they're so poignant, you know, supporting them or, you know, almost puts me at risk too. And so I think I do think that people have the room and grace, but you're not going to hear about it and read about it as much as you are about, well, they felt this way once, we're never going to forgive them. To me, that's just not how human beings are. We grow, we learn, we mature, we become better versions of ourselves, ideally. And brands, because they're run by people, essentially are the same thing. But yeah, I think you're not gonna hear about it as much as you will the louder voices.
Thank you. And what are the trends that we've seen emerge over, you know, the time of the pandemic and so on? Which ones do you think will last? You know, are people going to be, you know, home workouts, you know, for the rest, you know, for the next 5-6 months? Yeah, what's caught on is going to last? Or yeah.
A couple of things come to mind, actually. And these were things that I think were true going in, and then the pandemic just like solidifies it and makes it like that's forever. One of them is, we have this like these gatekeepers of society, and they're the brands and businesses and who are making all the decisions of like what product's going to make it to stores, what fashion everyone's going to see, and what artist is going to get greenlit to make the next hit album. Like there's these cultural gatekeepers, and Gen Z is just of a different mindset. They're much more bottom up. They don't need the top down access. I mean, they could do everything. If they want to create a hit song, they got everything they need right here with their computers, their phones, or their iPads. Like we have everything we need. And you've seen that actually happen. They've won Emmys. Or Grammys all the way to the top without having the access of a studio or a label. So I think that there's this move towards gatekeeperless. And in the pandemic, all the controls were off, right? Like suddenly everyone had to be creative. There's sort of a creative uprising and figure it out. And they've realized that, you know, all these things that I thought I might have needed or prevented me mentally from achieving some goal, I've been able to do here, I've been able to do now. And so they now believe in this gatekeeperless culture where we don't need the brands anymore and the big businesses, we can do it ourselves. And that's an attitude that has a ripple effect. The second thing that I think was going in and will carry, has become more true and will carry over are, I call it faces are the logo. And it kind of builds on what we were just talking about a moment ago, which is that brands need to be human. They need to think human. They need to act human. They need to be less corporations, even if they are one. But they need to think and act like people. And I believe that your brand is less about your logo and your curated advertising statement that you made it. It's about how the CEO talks about you. It is about how the people who buy your product, what they say about you. It's all the human beings that have touched your company in some way. It's the employees of how they feel treated when they work there. You know, that culture around the brand is the marketing, and those are people. Yeah. I mean, I believe really strongly that. I mean, that's what we gear everything around the brands we work with to do.
Yeah, thank you. Clint, I've known you for a number of years. I believe, you know, you were with us from the start when we launched VoxBurner over in the US. A lot's happened, bar obviously working, you know, with ourselves. What would you say has been, you know, one of your proudest achievements in your career so far? I know you've worked with some, you know, fantastic brands and so on, but, you know, what for you has been a couple of highlights that you'd like to share today? Great.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, when I hear that question, it's probably not actual like projects. I mean, there's a lot of actual projects I've looked at and said like that was a great project, but I think the creative in me and, you know, and a lot of people, it's like as soon as you're done with your project and it's out there in the world, you immediately hate it. You're like on to the next one, and you're trying to climb the mountain again. I think if I just think about what am I the most proud of, it's probably a couple of things. It's the team that we've built here at Arch Rival. Like I just think about the people I work with. They're so good at what they do. Sometimes I'm just flabbergasted. I'm like, look at all the people we got. Like these people are killer. They're so good and so smart and so creative and so talented that I actually am like, you know, like the proud dad sometimes where I'm just like, look at this, look what we got here. Oh my gosh. Like that makes me proud when I think about it. And then the second one is, that I think about is actually like a personal thing where I'm really proud because I think this was a struggle for me, and I know it's a struggle for a lot of people, is that, you know, this idea of work-life balance is like you hope for it one day and you think about what if, but like the reality is it's like it's a grind, and the creative industry is, it becomes so personal. You put all your time and energy into it. And I think one of the things I'm proud of is that I got to a point where work-life balance is real. And that's like a weird milestone to reach, but I got there somehow. And it's made the work better. It's made my life better. And I just, there's something that I'm very proud of. Now I still work really hard. I was up till 1:30 last night cranking on stuff. Like, you know, I still have the passion, I'm in it, but in general and totality, there's a work-life balance now that I think is really healthy.
I think that's something that so many people, especially now working from home, that work-life balance is an enormous challenge. Do you know how that happened? Was it like an epiphany one day, or, you know, any insight into how that, you know, how that worked for you? Or,
well, maybe that's, you know, the, well, it is, but I have an answer. I think as soon as you can remove your ego out of the work, okay. Like, you want ego in the work when you're doing it, because you want to like kill it and be awesome and make this project and this effort the most amazing it can be. But you got to be able to take the ego back out of it and let it just, that project is what it is. And I think as soon as I was able to remove my ego from it and just let things move on and exist, and then you can deal with that in rational ways. In the creative moment, I'm all in. It is highly personal, highly emotional. But now I can just like wall it off and jump back out of it and look at it and be like, huh, is that any good? You know, and should it live on and should it not? And I don't have to stay up all into the night worrying about it or trying to perfect it.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a like good takeaway for me. And to wrap things up, Clint, as you know, we draw to a close, what advice, or I guess, you know, what would your one key takeaway be for our listeners today? They wake up tomorrow, they, you know, they want to connect, engage, understand, you know, breathe culture.
Yeah, it's easier said than done. But I think right now a lot of people are wrestling with, how do you engage culture? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you do this well? Everyone's worried about their jobs. Everyone's worried about getting canceled. Everyone's worried about improving their products and getting, you know, people. So you feel the pressure to market. And I would just say, engage culture. Listen and act. Don't hide. Don't stay silent. That's certainly on the in the long run, when you look back, that's being on the wrong side of the equation. For now, I'd say engage it. Put your best foot forward. Be honest. Be transparent. And just do your best. And I, as to our, what we talked about before, I think people have a lot of grace to give in these times.
Yeah, great. Clint, that, like, really great chatting to you this afternoon. Thank you very much. And if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best email to catch you guys on ArchRival?
Yeah, it's certainly easy. It's just Clint, my first name, Clint, @archrival.com, or just go to our website and you'll find me there.
And you can hear more from ArchRival and 25 other great speakers at our YMS Online USA event this October. Have a great week ahead, and I look forward to welcoming you back here next week for some more youth trends from VoxBurner.